I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to take a trip out west without even leaving Indiana. Westfest opens at the Idle George Museum in Indianapolis this Saturday. Westfest is a festival designed to immerse museum goers in the experience of the American West. My guests are Jack Nigg, Idle George Festival and Markets Manager, Bert Beiswanger, Director of Marketing and Communications for the museum, and trick roper A.J. Silver. Please join what promises to be a fun conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, finding us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or tracking us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are going to be talking today about the Idle George Museum of American Indians and Western Arts upcoming Westfest. It opens this Saturday. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Jack Nigg. She is the Festival and Markets Manager for the museum. Bert Beiswanger, who is Director of Marketing and Communications for the museum, and one of the featured performers, exhibits, or whatever, at Westfest, A.J. Silver, who is a trick roper. I'd like to welcome all of you to the program. Good to have you here.
Thanks, John.
So I'm going to start with you, Jack. Tell me a little bit about what Westfest is and how it's different from the typical offerings of the museum.
Well, we really love at the Idle George to enliven the museum, to have life in the museum, to represent history and the present in really all of our public programs that we do. And Westfest it's extra fun because we can be not silly with it, but there are a lot of things in the West that are fun, both the myths of the West and the reality. And we have found that we knew that it would be a great event for families, but it's also this great event for older generation. And what we found, we thought there'd be parents bringing their kids, but over the years, we've discovered a lot of grandparents bringing their kids and really discovering the West. Right now, as many people know, we've got the Great Grand Canyon exhibit. And so that is a really wonderful exhibit of art and artifacts. But it's still, although fun as an exhibit, it still is very museum-y. And the thing about Westfest is we really try to bring these museum-y things alive. So we have a chuck wagon with a cook. He's going to be making authentic chuck wagon grub. And we've got stagecoach rides from the Wells Fargo stagecoach, which is beautiful. We've got black cowboys and white cowboys and women and the strong diversity in the West. There are things we can't do because of our space. We have a rodeo, but it's a stick horse rodeo. And, you know, we try to show a lot of things. We'd show black and white films, a lot of old Westerns, really trying to just bring the idea of the West to life in Indianapolis because people don't know necessarily what it is, what's real, what's not real.
Now, was this, Bert, was this done deliberately in connection with the Grand Canyon exhibit that is still going on? I mean, is that a way of sort of closing the book on what's been a pretty successful exhibition?
I think it's really more of just a successful happenstance. Okay. This is at the same time we had Westfest last year, and for listeners who may not know, this is the 100th anniversary of the National Park System, so that's the reason we had the Grand Canyon exhibit this year. Mm-hmm. We've been wanting to do this exhibit for quite a while, so we produced that exhibit in conjunction with this 100th anniversary, and it just so happens that, yeah, we're in the stretch run of this thing. We're right in the middle of the kind of the summer vacation months, the things to do months, And so the timing of Westfest fits in perfectly with wanting to get that final reminder out to the general public about the Great Grand Canyon exhibit that we have going on.
We do. We normally have it later, a little bit later in the year, August mm-hmm. or September, but we moved it up because we thought it was such a great pairing with Grand Canyon. And also Saturday, July 23rd, is the National Day of the Cowboy, which is recognized in 11 states. Indiana is not one of them yet, but we thought that that would be a really fun connection as well.
Is some of the timing also connected to the changes in school calendars and all of that? I mean, I know summer vacation schedules and the times that people are available to do things have shifted with all of that. Bert, Jack is looking in your direction.
Yeah, so I know.
That one's being punted,
on this, right?
Is going to be punted your way.
You know what? That helps out because, you know, that's the calendar we always have to work on. But we're also working around everything else going at the museum. So, you know, this is just a date that fit perfectly, you know, in conjunction with what we have going on now and then working around what we have coming up in the future.
AJ, how did you get pulled into this? I was tempted to say, how did you get roped into this? But I thought that the pun would be a little too outrageous. How did you get pulled into
this? I was contacted to perform my trick roping act, and I'm really excited to be part of the festival. I actually perform all over the world, and I represent the cowboy and the Western culture. You know, it's very interesting because when people think of America from other countries, what's exotic to them, what's exciting to them is our culture of the West. Not only the cowboy, but also the beautiful culture of the Native Americans. And when they look at America, that's what's different. You know, that's what sets us apart as far as our history and our culture. And I'm really proud, you know, to represent that. I have an interesting story. I actually started my career as a professional rodeo trick rider. And I would do things while the horse was at a full gallop. I would go under the belly of the horse, standing on two horses, jumping over, jumping through hoops of fire. And now I perform a Western variety act with trick roping and whips and some comedy, some audience interaction. And, I love this career that I chose.
What sort of tricks are you going to show folks
here? I'm going to be mostly showcasing the trick roping, the tricks that are done with the lassos. I also do whip artistry. Mm-hmm. And the interesting things about these tricks or this art form mm-hmm. is they actually come from the working tools that the cowboys use in their everyday, you know, while working. It's not like it's very different than, say, a circus performer who juggles, because the juggling isn't really used for anything mm-hmm. but performance. Mm-hmm. But the cowboy's lasso was actually used, you know, for working, and also the whip was used. It wasn't used to hit the animals, but it was used to herd the animals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then they, because they had these in their hands all the time, they actually ended up coming up with different tricks, and they, which were later became actual events in the rodeo. People don't realize that, but trick roping and trick riding were one of the earlier events in the rodeo.
How did you get interested in this,
okay, well,
AJ?
Very unique part of my story is because I don't come from out west. Mm-hmm. I was born and raised in New York City, believe it or not, in the Bronx of all
places.
Okay,
yeah. I thought I picked up a little bit of the accent, yes.
Yeah. You talked about the national parks. Well, it's not a national park, but I grew up riding horses in the Bronx park system. And people don't know this, but the Bronx has huge and beautiful parks. It actually has New York City's largest park. It's called Pelham Bay Park. And when I was 11 years old, I went to the rodeo at Madison Square Garden. And at the rodeo, I was blown away, first of all. And I saw trick riding, which was basically the people doing acrobatics on fast-running horses. Right then and there, I decided that's what I wanted to do with my life. But here I am, a kid in the Bronx. How is that going to happen? Mm-hmm. Sure enough, I met mentors in the Bronx, Nick and Helen Panzella, who were professional rodeo cowboys, cowgirl. And they took me under their wings. They trained me. I went to college. And after graduation, I went on the rodeo trail, and I performed in rodeos all over the United States professionally for over 20 years.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Westfest. It's an upcoming festival at the Idle Jorg Museum of American Indian and Western Art. It starts this Saturday. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So, Jack, I know that the festival starts this Saturday. If people want to attend, what all can they expect? I know you've talked about a chuck wagon, and we know that there's going to be some performances from AJ. What else will be part of WestFest, the interactive pieces of it?
Well, I want to touch slightly first on AJ's story, because I think one of the neat things about the West and the idea of the West, the romantic West, and our country is this idea that, you know, everyone from the West in history started from the East for the most part, not the native cultures that were already there. But there's this, I have to giggle a little bit, that a boy from the Bronx mm-hmm. made his way and is working professionally as a cowboy. That's fantastic. Some of the other things that we have, the Farmer and Adele. It's a country swing band. They've got high, lonesome sounds, really a lot of the great traditional instruments, the mandolin and steel guitar, the dobro and upright bass. They are fantastic, really fun. I'm looking forward to seeing them perform live. And we also have some more local groups that do we've got the indie Old Time Ambassadors, and they do a lot of trail songs, like not necessarily trail riding like you would think, a cowboy on his horse with his guitar, but some of the songs that might have been sung in the camp towns or the mining towns. So we've got a lot of music, and we also have this Stick Horse Rodeo. It's my favorite thing that we do, because it's just fun to see kids kind of try their hand at some of these kid things. You know, we have herding, but we do the herding with balloons. We put a little water in balloons, and they have to try to get them to all go where they want them to go. We've got a cow named Maybell that we've created that they can try to milk. We've got steer roping and the stick horse Broncos, a lot of silly things, but things that are related to what would be real ranch work, you know. And we, as the Idle Jorg, as a museum, we've got our whole educational thing, but we're really just trying to make it fun. We've got a lot of storytellers and first person reenactors, Hopalong Cassidy, and a lot of really fun people to interact with. We just really try to make a whole immersive Western environment.
Now, you said you were going to show some of the black and white films. What movies are you showing?
Oh, I was afraid you were going to ask me the names of them.
Well, I'm not asking for a comprehensive list.
Yes, just a lot of the early films that were made with a lot of, you know, gunfights and horse riding and a lot of from the 20s and 30s, those films. But I don't remember their names.
Oh, like old serials?
Old, yeah.
Would Stagecoach be one of them, the original?
The movie?
Yeah.
No, the John Ford movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I love that movie.
Yeah. So you're looking at the films then that sort of establish the mythology
right.
of the West.
Right.
Is there any effort to sort of contrast mythology and reality most of the gunfights did not occur with people standing so many paces away from each other and counting down?
A lot of that is through our first-person interpreters actually interacting with our visitors. But then we have a lot of signage that actually say, myth, the cowboy's most important thing that he owned was his horse. Reality, he probably didn't own a horse because the horses were really expensive. He maybe owned a saddle. Or that guns won the West when really it was probably barbed wire. So those kind of interesting things. And just that, you know, when you ride the stagecoach, you get the idea of, all right, this is what it would be like to, you're in it for 5 minutes, but if you had to ride in it for hundreds and thousands of miles.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about an upcoming festival at the Idle Jorg Museum of American Indian and Western Art. It's called West Fest. It opens this Saturday. My guests are Jack Nigg, who is Festival and Markets Manager for the museum, Bert Beiswanger, who's Director of Marketing and Communications with the museum, and A.J. Silver. He's a trick roper who's going to be performing as part of the festival. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can find us on social media. I am John Krall. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about a new festival that will be opening at the Idle Jorg Museum of American Indian and Western Art this Saturday. It's called West Fest. My guests are Jack Nigg, who is Festival and Markets Manager for the museum, Bert Beiswanger, who's Director of Marketing and Communications for the museum, and A.J. Silver, a veteran rodeo artist and Western performer who's going to be doing trick roping and whip artistry as part of the festival. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. So, Bert, I'm going to ask, how many people do you expect to come to West Fest? I mean, what's standard attendance for this?
Well, we usually have it's in the four figures.
Okay.
Typically for this festival is what we're shooting for. And you know, again, this festival gives us an opportunity to broaden our scope a little bit.
Yeah.
And reach, and it's to build new audiences as well as Jack said, it really activates the museum and makes it an engaging place in a way that we're not always able to do. So, you know, this really pulls in that peripheral visitor that may not have been to the outdoor before, or they may be coming back with a larger group because they're bringing their kids.
So, Jack, if people want to come, do they need to make reservations ahead of time, or can they just walk up there on Saturday?
They can just walk up. It's included with the price of the admission to the museum. So I think that's $13 for adults, and our members are always free, and parking is free, which is pretty great for downtown, as long as we can make that last. As Bert said, it's to activate the museum. Mm-hmm. We really want people to come in and to see. I think that the Idle Jorg can look not foreboding sometimes, but, you know, it's very pretty. It's very distant on the front lawn of White River State Park. And I think that we want people to know that it's a place where families are welcome. It's a place where you can bring your kids and have fun. You know, a lot of the events that we do are fancy, highfalutin. I should try to use all my Western-y words, but are there highfalutin? You know, we have that, and we're really good at that. But we're also really good at having these enjoyable. I just keep saying fun because that's my kids have been coming to this event every year of their lives, and they look forward to it. It's not just, oh, Mama has to work another Saturday. It's can I see Cameo, which is the name of the horse. That we have that comes, you know, they have relationships. Oh, this year I want to do this. This year I want to see that. And I think it's neat.
When does it start and when does it end?
It starts at 10 a.m. and it goes until 5.
So you've got that period of about 7 hours. Mm-hmm. And is everything in kind of a continuous loop, or are there certain events scheduled at certain times? For example, if people want to come see AJ perform.
I don't think we have the performance schedule on the website. Sorry, Bert. That means I haven't gotten it to you guys yet. But the performers will be on a loop. AJ's going to perform two or three times. It's going to be 95 degrees. I'm so sorry to have to tell you that. But
so it might be Sweatfest.
Sweatfest
for you.
So his performances will be, you know, short, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, something like that, because it's pretty physical and it's hard. And so, but I think he'll also be around to interact with people.
Yeah, that's right. I have some small lassos that the children could try to spin and, you know, also interact with them. And believe it or not, kids love to be roped. you know, it's one of those things.
And their parents probably like it occasionally, too.
Yeah. So it's definitely, you know, interacting with the children. And the adults, you know, will also come over and try to spin the ropes. And, you know, they also find it very interesting as well to get involved.
So, AJ, I'm going to a lot of years ago for a newspaper story I was working on, I had to learn what was a pretty simple rope trick, which is the one that that James Dean did in the movie Giant, where he has a rock at the end of the rope and he manages to make a knot without actually tying it. He flips it up in the air and then drops it through the loop and it ties itself. And I was amazed because the person who showed it to me made it look so simple, and it seemed like it took me years to master it. And that's not a particularly complicated one. How long did it take you to acquire the skills that you have to use now, and how did you go about doing it?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Trick roping is such a delicate skill, and it's a skill that you actually, I believe, you never master, because it takes constant practice. There are so many things that you have to worry about. Humidity affects the ropes. The wind affects the ropes. Temperature affects the ropes. And, you know, they're
right.
Soft ropes.
Right now you're making Jack really nervous.
So it's humid.
What you have to do is it's an object that you have to manipulate. But the problem is that the object is not fixed. So you have to create the loop, and then you have to manipulate it. And in doing that, you know, at the loop is created by a small loop called a honda. And then you take the end of the rope and you put it through, and that's what creates the lasso. And that honda, you have to keep at the exact place, you know, and if it slips an inch or 2 inches either way, it's pretty much disaster for the trick roper. And, you know, if something goes wrong with the rope, it usually means that it's in a big, you know, pile. You know, it's not so easy to cover up. And, you know, it's interesting, Will Rogers, who was famous for trick roping, I was reading his biography, and he was saying how he thought it was crazy that he actually did this act because he was so nervous about going on stage because it was so easy to make a mistake. And then we found out that why he became famous was because of his wit and his you know, the jokes that he told on stage, because what happened is he would make a mistake, and instead of trying to cover it up and make believe it didn't happen, he would tell a joke. And then what happened was the producers of the vaudeville show said, hey, that works. That's amazing. He's like, keep that in your act. And then he actually became what was called a talker. And the talkers made more money for speaking during their acts. So, yeah, trick roping, there's no easy way, but just lots and lots of practice.
How did you make the transition? You said you started out as a trick rider. How did you make the transition to, why did you make the transition to?
Yeah, trick riding was my passion. That's what I loved. And when I was performing in the rodeos, you know, cowboys always have a rope in their hands. So, and that's what you do when you're not, you know, when you're not actually performing in the rodeo. You're back behind the chutes. You're with the other cowboys, and everyone is basically just learning tricks. And it ended up that I was sort of a natural, and I became really good at trick roping. And one of the rodeo producers said, hey, we could use an extra act. You know, can you create an act? And that's what I did. And then I just sort of got better and better. I used to be a trick rider that also trick roped. Now I'm a trick roper that used to trick ride. but as I got older, the trick riding is really, really difficult on the body. You know, I got tired of not being able to walk in the morning when I woke up.
Yeah,
so
that would
I realized
get old.
That
yeah.
It was time for me to retire from trick riding. Yeah.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Westfest, the Idle Jorg Museum of American Indiana and Western Arts upcoming festival that celebrates all things Western, mythical and real. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. So we've gotten a question via Twitter from a listener just asking us to talk a little bit about how a museum of Western art ended up here in the heart of the Midwest and all of that, the background on the museum.
But, yeah, and that's really interesting because most museums like us, you're going out to Oklahoma, New Mexico, Arizona, California, Texas, et cetera. So Harrison Eilersorg was a very prominent businessman here in Indianapolis, and he did a lot of work out west. And through his travels out west, he gained an appreciation and passion for the west and started collecting art and artifacts and things like that. And his collection grew as such that he needed a home for it. And that's pretty much the impetus of creating the Eilersorg Museum back in 1989. It's so fascinating to look at everything around us now. When we were built, I think at one end of the park, White River State Park, was the zoo. And that was created right before us in the 80s. And then here we were as the other bookend of the park and a lot of
silos
and things like that in between, and to see just that, to feel like that we were a beginning part of that whole evolution is pretty awesome. But yeah, we get that question a lot. But I think that's one thing when people locally or out of town visitors, when they walk into the museum, they're blown away. Because I'm not sure everyone understands what we're about and whether they would be interested in a Western museum living here in Indianapolis, Indiana. And they're fascinated. And the feedback we get once the visitors are in the door is through the roof. So
probably ought to ask, too, how do you define the West? I mean, at one time, you know, in American history,
right,
this would have been considered the West. Indiana would have been.
And we've said that sometimes we want to include things
from
in programming or whatever. Yeah. I think, you know, we tend to define the West historically. So that could include us at some point, Indiana and beyond. But, you know, the other part, it gets a little tricky because our museum is not a Western museum and it is not a Native American museum. It's both.
Mm-hmm.
And so Native America isn't just from the West.
Yeah.
So we end up blending a lot more and we end up separating. We do have Native stories and Native galleries, of course, that people can visit during West Fest.
Mm-hmm.
But resource wise, it can be difficult to have Native performers come and be part of West Fest. And sometimes, because I also plan our Indian market and festival.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes I feel like, okay, check, I've done the Indian event, and now check, I've done the Western event for the museum. That's the things when there's an overlap, obviously.
Do you, I mean, it, as part of West Fest, it's almost exclusively then the European origin Western experience, those Americans who are of European origin?
We do tell some stories, some Native stories when we can. I unfortunately this year don't have anything outside of our galleries that we've got our guided tours that are going to highlight some of the Western tribal stories. But performance wise, we don't. It would be more of the European experience.
Bert, yeah.
This is one thing I really like about when we produce a festival like this is and it gets back to Jack's opening comments about engaging the museum. And, you know, a day like this Saturday, this festival is going to be all around the museum, but it's going to be in the museum as well. So while it's, you know, West Fest is a theme, it really gives the visitors an opportunity to get inside the museum as well and experience our galleries as they would see them every day, in addition to these, mm-hmm. you know, additional engaging stories and performers like AJ that we have for the public to see.
AJ, in the years you've been doing this, what have you found to be the biggest myth or misperception about the West and the Western experience?
Well, it is interesting. Someone had just commented about the West actually being settled by people from the East.
Yeah.
Of course, I always hear a lot of jokes about being a cowboy from the East. But when I was doing professional rodeo, I was never treated differently. People always accepted me, you know, because basically, you know, at one point, everyone in America, you know, was familiar with horses. You know, everyone in America, you know, grew, you know, had their own sort of farm and, you know, were involved with animals and agriculture. So I guess in my travels, what I do find interesting, and I think most Americans don't realize this, and I mentioned this earlier, is that when the world, other countries look at America, they are just fascinated by our culture of the West. And other nations are just so fascinated by the beautiful culture of the Native Americans that I think we as Americans sometimes forget just how special that was and just how beautiful, you know, it is. And, you know, other, for some reason, other countries are really, like in Germany, people are fascinated by the Western culture and the Native American culture.
And I presume you've traveled and performed in all of those places.
I have. I've been all over the world. I just recently got back from performing in Greece. I spent a lot of time in Germany. I've been to Asia, and people love cowboys.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I'm proud to bring the spirit of the West and represent it.
And where are you? I know you were raised in the Bronx. Where are you based now? Still New York?
I still call New York home, but I do travel quite a bit. So I guess, you know, there's that saying, home is where you hang your hat. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely true. That's true with me as well.
So, Jack, you say you bring your kids every year to this.
Yes.
What are their favorite parts of it? What are the parts that they can't wait to get to?
Well, my daughter, Jasper, who is 8, I almost said she was 9. Oh, boy. she loves Cameo, the horse. Mm. Some years, because of how the grounds are set up, it's just you get to sit on Cameo, and then some years you get to ride around a little bit. And for her, that's just everything, that big, loving, trusting animal. She just thinks it's the neatest thing. And you know, a lot of city kids don't interact with large animals. We are going to have some oxen on the front lawn as well. We've had a longhorn steer in the past. That's her favorite. My son, who is actually autistic, he really likes a lot of the hands-on things that mm-hmm. we do. We try to create hands-on crafts that, again, are similar to either what kids would do. One of my favorite pieces in the Grand Canyon exhibit are these 2,000 or 4,000-year-old stick figures.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would make something like a replica of that, or we would make something that relates to the West or relates to what our exhibit is at the time.
What is the toughest part of the festival to pull together? I mean, I'm thinking this is a lot of moving parts and a lot of animals. And, you know, what was it? W.C. Fields said you never want to work with either children or animals if you're performing. What is the most difficult piece of this to pull together?
It, you know, for me, the most difficult thing is just finding a good combination of performers. The performers are so important. I mean, it's what you hear, it's what you see. And there are times I've found bands where I just want to bring the same people back year after year after year because they're so fantastic, but we have to keep it fresh and new too. So it's researching Western performers without being able to see them perform or meet them. The trick is just resources in Indiana.
We are talking about the Idle Jorg Museum of American Indian and Western Arts upcoming West Fest this Saturday. My guests are Jack Nigg and Bert Beiswanger of the museum, and A.J. Silver, a trick roper who's going to be performing there. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about the Idle George Museum of American Indian and Western Art's upcoming West Fest. It's a festival this Saturday that celebrates the American Western experience. My guests are Jack Nigg. He is festival and markets, or she is festival and markets manager for the museum. Bert Beiswanger, whose identification I was jumping over to there, is director of marketing and communication for the museum. And A.J. Silver is one of the performers, primarily going to be doing trick roping, but it sounds like he's done just about everything that involves the American rodeo experience at one time or another. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Bert, during the break, you were amplifying on a point that AJ had made about the fascination that people from other parts of the world have with the American West and how you see that manifested through your work with the museum and the people who come to see it.
Yeah, whether it's conventions in the downtown area that have a lot of international visitors, or I just mentioned this year with the 100th anniversary of the Indianapolis 500 and all of the additional visitors from out of the country that came in for the 500. It was really neat to see the international flavor in the museum and just how fascinated people are with our museum. And, you know, we saw that with visitors from England, from Australia, from New Zealand, from Spain. And so, again, to AJ's point, the American cowboy, the West, Native American cultures, that's really very defining for them when it comes to America and what we are. And so, you know, our ultimate goal is, we have a tagline that says telling amazing stories. And I think that's what we're all about at the end of the day, whether it's for local folks here who are having an opportunity to learn more about the art, history, and cultures of the West and Native Americans or international visitors. It's what we try to do every day is tell amazing stories.
AJ, in your travels, when you talk about the fascination people have with the West, what parts of it resonate the most powerfully with them? What parts of those stories? I'm going to ask that of everyone because I think your answers are going to be a little different. I'm just curious to see how other cultures view that, incredibly important part of our mythology as a nation.
I mean, I think some people, still think that, everyone in Texas rides a horse and, dresses like a cowboy. You know, they sort of, when they think of the Western states of America, they just assume that everybody who lives in those states is a cowboy or a cowgirl, and I have to tell them, well, that's not, true. I have friends in Texas who have actually never been on a horse, who have never seen a rodeo. So, they sort of just see America, everyone wears a cowboy hat and, swinging a rope. I also sort of like to explain the history and the evolution of the cowboy, which I think even a lot of times Americans don't know. It was the Spanish who first brought horses and cattle to North America. I read an interesting story that said the first time Native American Indians saw a Spanish vaquero on a horse, they actually thought it was a mythical creature. They couldn't believe their eyes that there was an animal and a human being, as one, because they've never seen that before. And I think most people just tend to think that, horses were always in America. And, and what I do, the trick roping, actually was invented in Mexico by the Mexican Charles. And, most of the words that the cowboys use today have Spanish origin. Rodeo, lasso, lariat comes from the Spanish word lariata, rope. So, even when I'm, dealing with Americans today, I sort of, like to sort of teach them the history and, how the cowboy evolved.
Jack, same question to you. What part do you think resonates the most powerfully with people? What explains our fascination with the American West, because it is a mythology that mm-hmm. transcends really any other region of the country. Probably the American South is about the only one that gives it any kind of competition.
It's interesting to me because I was thinking, in terms of internationally, as Bert was saying, that there's this vision. But I also think that in our own country, as we divide ourselves between I'm from the East. I'm from South Dakota originally, and one of my coworkers is also from South Dakota. I'm from the eastern part of the state, and she's from the western part of the state. And I definitely identify more Great Plainsy,
mm-hmm.
and she is more western. She's closer to Montana.
Yeah.
She said to me recently that I might as well just be from Minnesota.
Yeah.
Which is very funny. If you're from South Dakota, probably not anybody else. It's a diss. I think that...
Well, the folks from Minnesota don't see it that
right.
way. They see it the other way around.
That's
There's
true.
A certain rivalry
yes,
that
exactly.
goes on there.
I think that you said mythology as a nation.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that we tend to do is... through movies, through pop culture, we have this view of what the West is, and it's the white cowboy in a white hat. And one of the things that the Idle Jorg tries to do is to really broaden that. We want everyone to see themselves in the story of the West. There were black cowboys. There were obviously Hispanic, the Chinese, the Jewish settlers, especially in California, like all of the women, mm-hmm. all of the different people who made the American West. And that includes, when internationally, I think people think of our native, there's the American Indian, the one culture of Native American Indian, which tends to be a Plains image, maybe more like Sioux, Lakota.
Mm-hmm.
But what we have is we have over 600 tribes in this country. And when you look at the difference between the Eastern tribes and the Western tribes, nobody, even Americans, don't recognize those differences. And so I think it's just interesting to me to see that people hold on to that mythology, that romanticized version of what the West is, wide open spaces and there's still beauty in our national parks. There's still beauty in a lot of places, but that it's just a place. It's America.
Has it changed though? Because I'm of a vintage that when I was a boy, almost every other TV show was a Western.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the movies were. And, that began to slow down as I moved into adolescence and young adulthood. And now, there really aren't Westerns on TV anymore other than, occasionally on some of the premium. And those are more about demythology rather than mythologizing. And there's maybe a movie with a Western theme every 5 years that comes out.
And now it's, of course, aliens in the West or some kind of
supernatural
something,
West. Something like that. So, and I would think, and there was a frame of reference for what the Western myths were 50 years ago when the Western sort of defined so much of American popular culture. But now, it's all sci-fi or dystopian stuff or whatever. Does that make the task easier or harder in terms of trying to tell the museum story? I'll start with you on that one, Bert.
Well, that's interesting because that's the whole Hollywood West thing.
That's
what I was going to touch on earlier. That formed the opinions and molded, the mindsets of a lot of people. And, as a museum, we're going to explore that further down the road. One thing I like about the Grand Canyon exhibit right now is that brings a real realism of the West right back to us. it makes it personal for people because so many people have traveled to the Grand Canyon. And so that kind of brings a nostalgia look at it for a lot of people. It opens their eyes to it for people who have talked about wanting to go out there but haven't gone out there. So, you know, it makes it – does it make it harder? I don't know. I mean, we've got we've got ways we want to tell our stories, and I don't think, for example, the Hollywood West mm-hmm. part of it, you know, we don't shy away from that. We use that as an opportunity to open our doors and conversations up to what we're really all about. So,
AJ, did you buy into the sort of the classic Hollywood mythology as a New York City, a Bronx kid? That presumably would have been the way you were first exposed to it. What was the biggest surprise?
Well, the rodeo, seeing the rodeo live. Well, first I started riding horses in the parks in New York City. And I was a horse fanatic. I would go after school and work at the stables with my brother. Then I saw the rodeo, which blew my mind. And, you know, that was it. That made such a big impression on me. But, you know, when videotape rentals were big, I would, you know, everyone else was getting science fiction films. I would rent the old Roy Rogers and Gene Autry films. And so, yeah, that was definitely a big, big part of, you know, my sort of fantasy of the West. You know, I find it interesting. Now I think the movies of the West really feature how hard it was mm-hmm. for these first settlers, for these first people who lived in the West. You know, when you think about what they dealt with. You know, I remember a story of just like settlers trying to get, getting to California, and they came across a herd of bison, and it literally took them days to get, you know, the herds were so big, and it just took them days to get around the herd, you know, not only like, you know, trying to get through the Badlands and the terrain there, or even just, you know, dealing with the mud in the street, you know, and it was a hard life, you know, what the people, the early settlers and what, you know, we consider the settlers of the West, what they dealt with. And I think that's what, when Hollywood does movies today, I think that's what's interesting. And I think that's what they sort of showcase.
When they blend this idea of, you know, white hat, black hat, not that people mm-hmm. were not and still are not entirely good and bad. I think there's still the AMC show Hell on Wheels.
Yeah.
That's being made now, or maybe they just ended their last season or something. So that's a contemporary made Western, but it's telling these stories that maybe are more realistic than romantic.
And in terms of what the museum tries to do in sharing this story and with West Fest, what do you hope people will take away from attending this festival?
My goal is that people have fun. Mm-hmm. That they, again, I said earlier that we have these neat multi-generational groups that come. My goal is really just to provide a fun day for a family, you know, grandparents, parents, and their kids. And I want them to take a way that the Idle Jorg is a fun place, and that it's good for families. And I want them to, I already said the education word. It's such a bad word to say as an event planner because people,
it's sort of like the eat your vegetables approach.
Yes, I don't want to be educated, yeah. But I think that we try to educate in this fun, interesting way. We don't have it this year. Years ago, we had this great vocabulary game with a big spinning wheel mm-hmm. that it would land on mm-hmm. on something, and the kids would have to try to guess what the word meant. And some of those words, you know, Bert, you're someone I would ride the river with. Some of those phrases are mm-hmm. things that you know, some of us on staff will still use every once in a while. But so we're trying to educate in this really fun way where you don't even feel it. You can't even taste your vegetables.
AJ, what do you hope people will take away from your performance?
Well, first of all, I want to be entertaining. You know, mm-hmm. I want them to sort of escape reality, whether it be for 15 or 20 minutes. Obviously, for children, I'm a great role model that if you mm-hmm. have a dream, It's possible with hard work. I never thought as a child that I would actually, be performing professionally as a cowboy, but it came true. I worked really hard. And I also just want to, I'm just such a big fan of the cowboy. And the trick roping, the whips, it's sort of a dying art. So I just think it's really exciting for someone to see it live. And I also do it. I do it in a very high energy fashion. I do it in an entertaining way. And, what I want, I always think of the audience first. And I want them to have fun and I want them to enjoy what they're watching.
What is the trick that's going to be the most difficult for you to execute, do you think?
I'm sorry, I missed that question.
What is the trick that will be the most difficult for you to execute?
Oh, sometimes some of the tricks that sort of people don't notice are the ones that are most difficult. I do a trick where I'll take the loop and I'll take it down and I'll make a really, really tiny loop. Mm-hmm. And that's really difficult to do. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people even, they don't realize that they saw that. So sometimes the bigger, more spectacular tricks are a little bit easier, believe it or not, to perform than some of the ones that sort of slip by the people. But, I think as a professional, we have to have that balance. We have to have things that are entertaining the audience, but we also have to have enough difficulty that we're proud of what we're doing. Yeah. And we're sometimes also performing for other ropers that might be in the audience or other, other cowboys.
Yeah. So, Jack, we're getting close on time. If people want to attend, is there a schedule of events online?
Anything? There will be.
There will be?
Okay. This afternoon, yes.
This afternoon? Where would they go to find it then this afternoon?
That's our website, which is
idlejorg.org. Okay. And right there on the homepage, there are some main graphics for what we have going on. The Grand Canyon and the West Fest are right there on the front homepage. It's click on that. Goes right to the West Fest page, talks about everything going on West Fest right now, and we will also integrate that calendar.
And it is on Saturday. It starts at 10 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
correct?
10 to 5.
10 to 5, and the cost, it's free if you're a member,
right.
If you want to come. And it is $13 if you want to attend and you are not a member.
For an adult, yeah, and $7 for kids.
Yep. Is children 5 to 17 are $7, and children 4 and under are free.
Oh, okay. So, and is there a family package, or is it just by individual?
Ooh, no, but that's a good idea.
Good idea. Well,
But I will say, if you wear Western wear, you get $1 off your admission.
Oh, okay.
Because we want everyone, we're trying to make this atmosphere, and if people come dressed up, and we're pretty loose with what we
consider Western wear. Well, I would like to thank all of you. I'd like to thank my guest Jack Nigg and Bert Beiswanger of the Idlejorg Museum, and A.J. Silver, who's a trick roper and is going to be performing at the festival. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cherzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.